WDAE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A new ABC News Ipsos poll out today showing Vice President Kamala Harris' favorability at 43%. It's up 8 points from last week, her biggest jump among independents, 44% compared to 28% just a week ago. Former President Trump's favorability rating dipping from 35% last week to 27% now. And who will be Harris's running mate?
Sources tell ABC News several moderate governors, Pennsylvania's Josh Shapiro, North Carolina's Roy Cooper, and Kentucky's Andy Beshear, as well as Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, are among the leading contenders. Harris will make a decision quickly. The vice president is expected to announce her choice by August 7th.
ABC's Terry Moran. Israel hitting targets in Lebanon following a deadly attack on a soccer field. Children among those killed. Israel blaming Hezbollah, promising the militant group will pay a heavy price. Polls have opened in Venezuela's presidential election, where the authoritarian regime of Nicolas Maduro facing a major challenge from the opposition. This is ABC News. A father-daughter trip quickly turning to tragedy in Yosemite Park. Now Jonathan Roloff is calling for change after watching his 20-year-old daughter, Grace, fall to her death at Yosemite's Half Dome. ABC's Morgan Norwood has more.
Grace losing her footing, sliding down some 250 feet, sustaining a fatal head injury.
10 minutes before she went down, she was smiling ear to ear, as happy as can be. You know, 10 minutes later, it was a tragedy to know that she had passed away.
The Arizona College student was an aspiring teacher, just like her parents. Her father, Jonathan, saying he's sharing Grace's story to keep her memory alive and to advocate for a safer cable system on Half Dome, saying the park needs to do more to improve safety.
While they were on Half Dome, a light rain quickly intensified that made their descent down the nearly vertical path treacherous. Apple agreeing to its first ever union contract with employees at one of its stores in Maryland. Dave Packer, ABC News.
At Fleet Farm, we know every sunny day doesn't begin and end with us. But if it did, we've got you covered. Everyday fishing gear from Rapala, Berkeley, and Minn Kota. Everyday grilling goods from Weber, Kingsford, and Blackstone. Everyday camping gear from Coleman, Yeti, and Eureka. Whatever makes your day, we're right there with you. At Fleet Farm, we've got everything you need for everyday life.
Grandpa's barbecue sauce. For decades, it's been a family secret. And if you weren't a blood relative, well, you never got a taste. Until now. Barbecue season is here. Get the rich, original Grandpa's barbecue. It's a classic. Reliable. Just like Grandpa. Apparently, some family secrets are meant to be shared. Buy yours online at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Media News, I'm Terry Bell. 1 in 8 people in Wisconsin could find it harder to afford food under the U.S. House version of the Farm Bill. Mike Moan reports.
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, falls under the Farm Bill, which needs to be reauthorized by the end of September. House Republicans have blocked efforts to maintain White House authority to make non-inflationary adjustments to SNAP benefits. Megan Rowe with the group Opportunity Wisconsin says not having that option would put recipients at a disadvantage.
SNAP benefits help over 700,000 Wisconsinites afford food, which is 1 in 8 people in our state. And so gutting this assistance would mean that these families have to make difficult choices.
The Congressional Budget Office says removing the provision would limit the scope of future SNAP increases by $30 billion. Advocates say that amounts to a large cut. Wisconsin Republican Congressman Derek Van Orden was called out for a recent committee vote to keep the option shelved. In a social media post, he accused Democrats of lying when saying the panel was cutting benefits. Suzanne Becker of the Feed My People Food Bank in Eau Claire says politics shouldn't come into play. She argues elevating SNAP levels as much as possible is a wise move.
We can never replace the impact that SNAP has on our neighbors. Nonprofits can't do that. We make a difference every day. We strive to. But this is a critical piece in making sure that all Americans have what they need.
Becker says her location sees a lot of demand among working families. Her team works with income-eligible clients to sign up for SNAP benefits, noting it's a lifeline for older populations. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. For your Sunday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms across the area. Mostly cloudy skies, highs in the lower 80s, and south winds of 5 to 10. For tonight, a few showers and storms. Look for lows to drop to the middle and upper 60s. Currently 77 degrees.
Earl Ingram.
Tune into the next show. It's Motown Monday. We'll react to the news from the weekend and talk about the issues impacting us all.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Kripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and we are brought to you by Everlight Solar. Hey, guys. Today, my guest is Chef Adam Pavlik. He is the owner of Egg and Flour in Milwaukee. You may have seen him on Hell's Kitchen season 19. He was on Super Chef Grudge Match on Food Network. He's done a bunch of other shows. He was best chef in Milwaukee. I can talk. And best new restaurant in 2019 and 2020. He's a great guy. He's a buddy of mine. And we are talking all things Milwaukee today, all things food, all things developing, what it takes to develop a food scene in a city. All right, ladies and gents, now it is time for my conversation with Chef Adam Pavlik. So give people sort of a sense of how you got your start. Let's take us to the origin story.
We're going to the back, all the way back? Or yeah. How far do we want to go?
I want to take it back to how you grew up and, sure. and sort of where you first discovered your love for the culinary arts.
Yeah, so I'm 75% Sicilian. So food, obviously, right away is a huge part of our family. Like, holidays, Sundays, I know that sounds kind of cliche, but that's a real thing. Like a Sunday dinner or having family over or just being around food all the time. My mom, Rosalie, great cook. We can give her a little shout out. I would say home chef, you know, but definitely did the Midwest. Like we call it the 25 rotation. You're probably familiar with this, where you just eat the same 25 things just in order as it comes around, as your mom knows what to do. That was the big thing. Like, we didn't go out to eat a lot. So it was like, if she's going to be in the kitchen cooking, that's where I learned a lot and kind of got inspired. But it took a little bit. Every restaurant or every job I've ever had has been in a restaurant. But it took till about 18, 19 when I was like, hey, I want to do this. I'm comfortable in this world. I bought a bunch of cookbooks, really like dug deep into it, you know, where it's like, this isn't just a job to like, you know, buy some Pokemon cards or something. Right. This is like, this is what I want to do. And at that point I did the Bartolotta thing. So I was at the airport at the Bartolotta restaurants. And that's when I was really like, took it seriously, moved my way up. The chef at the time, Robin, she was like, hey, there's nothing left for here. I'm not leaving anytime soon. The chef's not leaving anytime soon. You need to go spread your wings. And, that was a big moment. And she's always helped me and mentored me and really like beat me up in the kitchen to kind of get that old school way of training. And then from there on out, it was just like, I want more money. I want more knowledge and to learn more stuff. And I went to this restaurant called Turner Hall Restaurant, which was reopening down where when the Bradley Center was still around.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was my first like legit mentor, Chef Tommy Pichon. He was running
Hang on just a second.
Oh, he's pulling your whole set.
Yeah, he's doing the whole thing. Hey, Pooch, you don't want to eat that. Had the bleach.
We don't know if they're
sick. Make you sick, pal. Yeah. Yeah, he here might. I just don't want him doing just bleach. You know, when there you make the driftwood stuff, you got to
clean it up a little bit.
Yeah, you drown it in bleach. So I don't know how much of that bleach
he's got a tough stomach. He'll
be okay. Yeah, I guess we're going to find out.
I'll call you.
I don't want to be responsible for, killing Alfredo.
No, it's okay.
But sorry, I interrupted you. What were you?
No, that's okay. So then Tommy Pashong, Turner Hall Restaurant, and we were really killing it. And it was a way for me to learn.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you want to go down?
Oh. Don't go over there.
I'll be fine.
Does he have a toy in his bag?
Oh, yeah. He's got everything.
You want to grab a toy out of there and we can.
Yeah. Or give him a treat. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's done. What's
this? Let's bribe him with a treat.
With a cheeseburger.
Oh, there he goes. Did you just give him the toy that makes noise?
He's probably too small to like actually make noise.
Yeah, I don't think that one's going to make too much noise, but here we are.
It's hilarious, man.
So that's when I learned like the real basic soups and stocks and basic things and really like taking on a foundation. Because, I mean, that's the most important thing. It was him being with Tommy Pashong was essentially going to culinary school and getting paid for it and not having to do like the 7 a.m. you know, going to school all day and catching up on everything. It was just my way because I never went to culinary school. I don't know if you were going to ask that, but.
Well, I was. And in fact, I think I read somewhere that you didn't, or maybe we had talked about it or whatever, because I know that there are many paths to getting to do what you do, but usually it does involve like culinary school, does it not?
I would say the old way of doing it, it's like go to culinary school, go get a mentorship or do like they call it a staging where you go work at a restaurant almost for free and just learn things. Nowadays, there's so many different ways. My older brother, Alex, he went to culinary school and I didn't. It was kind of different routes, but here we are. And I think if you just find someone really good to learn under and take it seriously and work hard and a ton of studying outside of work, you know, I didn't learn everything that I know just at the restaurants I worked at. It's a lot of books and research. And, you know, I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're like, we have a lot of good stuff here, but there's a lot out there in the world, especially in the culinary world that you should really like kind of look into if you're going to take it seriously. And that's what I did a lot of the time. And now here we are. And I don't say culinary school is like something to stay away from. I think it's great. I think it is that foundation and you can learn a lot of great stuff, but it's not the end all be all if you don't go.
Right. Yeah. No. And I think that's good for, I think, especially people who may not have the money, may not have the finances to
or the time,
or they're already working in a kitchen and they're trying to plan sort of their career and how to do it.
I mean, it's what I always say is like get paid to play or pay someone to learn.
Oh,
hey, come here, Poach. Hey, buddy, go by Charlie. If you give him one treat, he'll follow you forever. It's in that little turquoise bag.
Go get it.
See, he already knows. You touch the backpack, it's open. You can load him up. Yeah. Here, get it.
Oh.
He'll stay with you if you got treats, for sure.
That's hilarious.
Damn it, Alfredo.
So, what is... like you take it from you're working in a kitchen, you're getting this experience, but in order to make it your own thing, that's got to take a different level of confidence. And where were you sort of age-wise, where were you mentality-wise that allowed you to kind of jump from one thing to another?
Yeah, so we'll go quick. So obviously Tommy Pashong, I was the lead line cook over there. He said, hey, you're ready, go do more stuff. So from there, I went to a restaurant called Porter Call back in the day. They had a lot of trouble with chefs and getting food right and all that. And they kind of brought me in to say, hey, we need a sous chef. And I think this was like their code word of being like, we just need you to do everything and kind of fix on what's going on. And I ended up being there for 3 years, but I started at like 23 years old as my first sous chef job. We were running the Edelweiss boats back then when they had them. So we were doing all the food and dinners plus a restaurant that was doing, you know, 2 million plus and just super busy, same crew and all that. And I had that job for a while and learned a lot. And after 4 months of being there, they actually were looking for an executive chef and they were like, oh, well, you could take the job or we'll hire someone above you. And I was like, well, I've been doing the job I know the space. This would be a good opportunity. And I went and took the executive chef job at then like 23 and a half, you know, because it was only a little bit when I was there, which was probably too quick. You know, nowadays people think like, oh, it's all about just being the chef. But if I could redo it, I would stay being, you know, a sous chef or a cook way, way longer and maybe work in some other countries or some other states or cities and learn some more. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of started the next move, which was Sebastian's in Racine. Really good top 30 restaurant for a long time, always doing well. And I humbled myself and I said, hey, I'm going to stop being executive chef. I need to learn more. I'm not learning from anyone. You know, that's the problem is when you're at the top, you don't learn a lot. I mean, you learn things from your employees and your kitchen crew and your sous chef and all that, but really taking it to the next level. I said, hey, I'm going to go take this sous chef job. It's, you know, more chill job. You know, you're not the boss, but way more intense and way more knowledge that needed to be learned. So I kind of stepped down and I was there for almost 2 years, and that was under Scott Sebastian and their chef and all them down there. And that's when I learned a ton of stuff that like I knew it was out there, but it was nice that they made me do it. So I was the chef. So I was breaking down fish. We had a farm in the back that we had to come early to work and actually tend it and learn how to like grow our own food and use that in our menu, and breaking down meat and doing sauces and stocks. And I mean, I was in there 3 or 4 hours before anyone else showed up. So it was really nice to take a step back from being like the head chef, executive chef, whatever.
Well, that right there, I know you're still going on this, but that's so cool on a number of levels. One, that you had your ego sort of in check at a place in your career. I think like young, you were what?
Yeah,
23,
I would say about 25 at that point. Yeah.
So at that stage,
you have to.
I know, but I feel like at that stage, like you hit that main chef, you get that title, and you know, so much at in your 20s, I feel like is about trying to make yourself appear sort of cool or doing better than you are in front of other people.
Of course.
And a big part of that is your job title.
Yeah.
So to sort of have the I guess love for the art to say, I need to learn more and do that. Was that an easy no-brainer thing for you, or was there some of that like ego check, or what are you going to tell people? Or does this look like a demotion?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this was like, it was like, I'm changing jobs. I'm not going to be the executive chef, but this restaurant is, you know, higher caliber. So it's kind of like evened its way out. But for me, I didn't even care at that point. I was doing that for so long. I had, you know, 15 kitchen crew, and there was 20 front of house, you know, servers, bartenders. And I was like, I kind of want to just step back and be on the line and learn and not have the responsibility at all that. But I would say for me, it was like a good change for me. And it was something where I was like, if I don't do this, I'm just going to be at a crossroads where it's like, this is what I know. And I'm either going to be at this restaurant for a really long time and just keep doing the same thing, or it's going to be really difficult to walk into another kitchen as an executive chef or take a job and really know that I don't know enough. I would rather demote myself and learn more. It'd be less embarrassing than going to a kitchen as the executive chef or applying for it. And then they're like, all right, you have to do this, this, and this. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do any of this, because it's every kitchen's different, you know?
Right.
Even if you're the best chef in the world, no matter what kitchen you're in, they have their own routine, their own way of doing things, their own, you know, their own menus, all that kind of stuff. So it's not like you jump in and you're like, oh, I'm a programmer. I can program anything, you know, at a different job or whatever. It's like, no, you have to learn the restaurant as you go. So the ego was in check. I was really excited. I ended up being there a long time, loved the decision. That was the decision that like really helped a lot. Like I can say thank you to them at Sebastian's. And that was just a really good decision. You know, you look back when you're like, hey, maybe I don't take this gig, or maybe I do, and it's not the best or it's not the most money ever, but I know it's going to help me later on. That was the one that I remember in the career, is just going from executive chef to sous chef, learning a bunch. And I was there for a while. And then I got a call from a buddy that was opening a nightclub style lounge on Jefferson Street. So like Cathedral Square area. And they needed some consulting work because they wanted to do like food early on, Chicago style, then it kind of like turns into a club later on. And I was like, you know what? I've been at Sebastian's for a while. I've been grinding ever since, you know, I wouldn't say 14, I would say 16 to 18, you know, from there on to, you know, that's 7 years of working a lot and saying no to a lot of things like fun things and friends and parties, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, you know what, this isn't going to be as intense. It's going to be fun. It's something brand new. It was a good time to get in because it was brand new. I could do the menu. I could hire who I wanted to. I could do things how I wanted to. And I was there for about a year and a half. And as you know, all good things come to an end. They were like, we are more of a nightclub than we are a restaurant.
Right, right.
And they were like, hey, we're still great friends. And it was just something that I was like, all right, it was kind of a career break. It was kind of like a vacation from the 150 degree kitchen, 100 hour a week kind of deal. And when it came to that point, I was like, all right, now it's time to like find something. So I had a lot of options, but they had to be smart decisions. I was thinking about going to the Pfister and being a chef under a mentor chef friend of mine. I was thinking about moving. Like that would have been the time that I would move to Chicago, New York, Arizona, you know, Cali, something like that, where I'm like, I don't have anything keeping me here. Right. Or do I stay here and find something? And at that point, I took a job at Black Sheep, which is in Walker's Point on 2nd Street. And that's when I kind of came in and they told me dear friend, he's not the owner anymore, but Wes Shaver, shout out to him, to kind of say, hey, we want you to put your own style on this. We want you to change our restaurant a little bit and get things in order, whether it's labor, food cost, you know, we want to be able to do some more stuff. And I came in, I ended up being there almost 3 years. We had the best brunch in the city. And that's when my style, like you were talking about, it's hard to kind of like break out, but that's when my style started coming. Like if I would post a picture or someone would post a picture on Instagram or whatever, they knew it was my food. And, or I would do tasting menus at nighttime where people could book with me and say, hey, I want to do 5-6 courses in the restaurant. I made a menu just for them while the restaurant was still going. And it was like a special setup for them. And that's when I started being like, hey, this is my style. This is what I want to do. That was the time I got an Instagram. I didn't even know what Instagram was until then.
But I mean, so you get to this point where you spend years and years doing it and doing it, doing it. And then at that point you develop sort of a distinctive style and you bring up Instagram. Like if you're trying to be a chef these days, how important is social media? You can, like in comedy, I would say it's very important. It's how you're going to book all your stuff. If you can bring people, you sell it. Is it the same thing with,
I mean, for me, for being a chef, I don't think you have to do it, but it's a good way to get your food out there and the things that you're doing to everyone, you know, not just your city, not just the followers of the restaurant or of you, but it's a way to get noticed and to get gigs and to meet other people. Like it's a lot easier nowadays to send a message to like your favorite chef, whether they respond or not. It's still cool to say that you have access to them.
Yeah.
Like, or, you know, whoever you look up to in the comedy world, it's like, you could probably send a DM and you know, like, hey, I reached out to them.
Right.
Back then, it's like, hey, I would love to meet them one day or whatever. And there was, you'd have to run into them or you'd have to go fly and go eat at the restaurant in hopes that they were there. But now it's a little bit easier. But
you know how everybody like sits here and takes a picture with their food at first?
Yes.
As a chef, does that they eat with their eyes, as Kelly likes to say?
Phone eats first.
Phone eats first, right.
Phone eats first, yes.
Phone eats first. So does that change? Like, is there more attention than there historically has been on the physical appearance of food? Or has that always been a huge part?
Depending. It depends on the restaurant, the owner, and the chef. If chefs are more in this modern age and they're thinking like, hey, my food's going to be on Instagram a lot, I should probably make it nicer. Sure. I like it because it gets eyes on it from whoever that customer base is. And if they're taking a nice video or a picture, they're getting it out there for me. It's free marketing, free promoting. And that just makes you want to make better looking food. You know, I've seen stuff on TikTok or Instagram or whatever, and I'm like, wow, that looks really good. I'm going to go eat there because of it, even just being a chef.
Oh, so you do that too. That's not just an average joke.
I like to see what people are doing. I can sometimes just figure out what a restaurant's doing or how it's going to be by the looks of the food or the atmosphere or whatever. So that's kind of nice. But I mean, I always tell people, I give people always a chance, no matter what. People are like, oh, that place isn't good. I'm like, well, I haven't been there, so I don't really care what you have to say. I want to go see for myself. So Pro tip out there.
Even if every customer got like food poisoning, you'd still go.
Food poisoning? No, I might not go. But if they said, oh, it wasn't my thing or too expensive. Or so a little tip to people out there, go no matter what. If you have not been to a restaurant, don't take other people's word for it. Just go and check it out and make your own rating or your own, you know, Yelp review or whatever.
Yeah, you've got that 414 hat on. Your
yes.
career obviously has been really built in Milwaukee. And so what like if you could describe Milwaukee's food scene, how would you describe it and how do you think it compares to the rest of the sure. US?
So for me, for Milwaukee, I feel like there's a lot of people that are born and raised here that stay here. They open something up. So you're really getting that person's food and what and their knowledge, whether they left and came back or whatever. But I feel like the people that open restaurants here, they're really showing their upbringing, you know, or what they is close to important to them. You don't see a lot of people opening a restaurant and then doing a concept that they just want to do for fun. It means a lot to them. So I know that that is a lot different than, you know, the bigger cities where some of these people are just like, hey, well, we have an Italian restaurant. Let's do, you know, let's do an Asian style restaurant. Let's do French and just like cover all the bases. I feel like here it's like they're really special because people are showing you their life on the in the food. You know, if you yeah. if you think about it, even like my restaurant, like Egg and Flour, it's casual, but it's still pasta. And the basis of that is what I've learned and basis of sauce and making great pasta. Then we didn't talk about this, but I was an old Jimmy John's employee, and that actually helped in the Egg and Flour concept because it's like fast casual. So it's like every little thing that I did in the career has a part in that restaurant, or it has, you know, I said, you know, we're going to be fast casual. We're serving on trays. They're ordering at the register, and we're going to give them a buzzer, and they're going to come up and get their own stuff. And that's very like a fast casual restaurant. Or more of a fast food style. But then the food is we're making our pasta from scratch and we're making all the sauces and all the garnish and all that. So that's taking it from, you know, a more upscale restaurant, bringing them together. So I feel like what I'm doing is a lot of what other chefs and restaurant owners and stuff like that are trying to tell their story in their restaurants, other than let's just make a bunch of money.
Right. And I think that's definitely cool, you know, being someone in Milwaukee, just knowing that there's that much passion behind it. And do you think the other stuff doesn't exist here because there's just not the population? Do you need a big city to be like, all right, there's not a French thing in this sure. radius. Just throw a French one there. It'll do good.
Sure. I mean, I think we have some of that, you know, and we have some of the big chain restaurants and whatnot, you know, right. the Capital Grills and like stuff like that. And then there's some more bigger restaurant groups, Bartolotta's and stuff like that. Lowlands Group, where they have Benelux and all,
yeah,
and
yeah.
they're growing and growing in Bel Air's and all that stuff. But I think it's like, I was so worried. I had three locations of Egg and Flour and I closed two of them and people were like, oh, are you doing okay? Are you fine? Like whatever. And I always thought like, oh, is it, what are people going to think? But I might have started the trend of being like less is more here in the city.
Yeah.
I see other big restaurant groups or people at multiple locations kind of go back to one or say, hey, let's have less going on or just one location and be okay with it and not feel like you're like a loser or you failed or whatever. It's like we tried something, it didn't work, and we're still doing something great. But we have some of those, like we have them here. There's restaurants, you can go to the Burbs and go to an Applebee's and Chili's and
right,
all that stuff.
Sure.
We need that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I need Olive Garden twice a year. I'm sorry.
As a Sicilian?
It's fine.
Oh my God.
It's fine. It's a cheat day. That's what we call it.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A new ABC News Ipsos poll out today showing Vice President Kamala Harris' favorability at 43%. It's up 8 points from last week, her biggest jump among independents, 44% compared to 28% just a week ago. Former President Trump's favorability rating dipping from 35% last week to 27% now. And who will be Harris's running mate?
Sources tell ABC News several moderate governors, Pennsylvania's Josh Shapiro, North Carolina's Roy Cooper, and Kentucky's Andy Beshear, as well as Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, are among the leading contenders. Harris will make a decision quickly. The vice president is expected to announce her choice by August 7th.
ABC's Terry Moran. Israel hitting targets in Lebanon following a deadly attack on a soccer field. Children among those killed. Israel blaming Hezbollah, promising the militant group will pay a heavy price. Polls have opened in Venezuela's presidential election, where the authoritarian regime of Nicolas Maduro facing a major challenge from the opposition. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Brewers lose again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers giving up 5 runs in the 7th. They lost 7-3 to the Marlins last night. Trying to avoid the sweep today. A recap of today's game coming up tonight. Pat Murphy asks, does he get concerned when players like Bryce Terang or Sal Frelick both go 0-4 at the plate?
Concerned? Yeah, I'm concerned. But this is what young people go through. I heard some people booing Sal Frelick during their strikeout there in the 8th. And I was like, are you kidding me? These kids have been battling their guts out.
The Brewers added reliever Rick Mears in a trade with the Rockies after having to place Bryson Hudson on IL with an oblique strain. Ryan Braun, honored today, added to the team Wall of Fame. At the Olympics, men's basketball Team Greece losing to Canada 86-79 despite Giannis scoring 34 points. NFL, Jordan Love says it was a long wait, but he's grateful for the deal he signed with the Packers.
Past couple of days, trying to be patient. My agents FaceTimed me, and it was definitely a very special day.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. For your Sunday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms across the area. Mostly cloudy skies, highs in the lower 80s and south winds of 5 to 10. For tonight, a few showers and storms. Look for lows to drop to the middle and upper 60s. It's 78 at our studios.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Could there...
Maggie Dawn.
Next, have you heard of the recombobulation area? Well, Dan Schaefer's sitting in the host chair, folks. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Folks, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to the Cripes Cast. I am Charlie Behrens, and this is my conversation with Chef Adam Pavlik. I want to talk about your time at Jimmy John's. I had some time over at Auntie Anne's. So we're like,
I love that.
We're both chefs.
How does Auntie Anne's play into your life today?
You know, that's fresh,
Jimmy John's.
That's fresh dough, yeah.
Fresh dough, absolutely. Yeah, we do it flour, yeast, hot water. Let it go in that big little stirred thing.
Let it
rise. And then you cut. You know,
strips, right?
Are you good at rolling?
I've never worked at a pretzel shop, but I mean, I would love the recipe if off camera.
Yeah.
We don't want them coming for you.
No, I'll give it to you. I'm trying to find if we have a rope here. I'll show you the pretzel roll technique.
That's legit. We should find something.
Yeah, I think
but like
we
she
should.
Said, what was your life lessons that you learned from Auntie Anne's?
Life lessons. One, this is an important one. If you don't have a line, people don't come. If sure. you have a line, more people come into line. It's a little counterintuitive.
So how do you get the line going? Are you yelling at them, giving away free lemonades, which are good too?
Yes, there were lemonade samples. There was pretzel samples. It was a lot of samples going. Now, I also learned that myself as a 16-year-old part-time bike mechanic, part-time pretzel roller.
Chef, not pretzel, chef. You were a chef.
I learned that I did not have the same ambition and enjoyment for culinary arts as perhaps you did.
Sure.
Because I was more focused on doing less work. I was a bad worker.
And
so line was good for you.
No line was good for me. And I enjoyed rolling pretzels. That's what I liked. I didn't like going over to the cash register and having interactions with people.
Customer interaction. Yeah. And now look at you. You talk to thousands nightly.
I know. It's crazy. But for whatever, you know, when you're in high school, you're kind of a, you know.
I worked at a pizza shop in high school. I wasn't putting on the white coat. I feel you. I was slanging pizzas and burgers and all that kind of stuff.
Can you do the pizza slang?
I can try, but not when it gets, you know, once it's a little bit bigger, I just put it down and say, hey, that's all I got.
Got it.
I mean, I've worked at
Milwaukee Brewer Baseball from WRCE Radio is sponsored by Jones Chevrolet Buick, A&W Restaurant, Badgerland Flooring, Clary Memorial Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Meister Log and Lumber Company, Napa Auto and Truck Parts, Bailey Paint and Decorating, Papa's Trading Post, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, Richland Electric Cooperative, Schmidt Woodland Hills, The Shoebox, Walsh's Ace, McFarland's Manufacturing, All-American Do-It Center, and Goplin Insurance.
...to enjoy during every pitch. Carbless, bliss is more.